You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, October 2nd, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is Matt and Mike Wednesdays on The Majority Report.
We are broadcasting to you
live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building
in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. On today's show, Republican government shutdown day two. We're going to be talking with Tim Murphy of Mother Jones Magazine. Also, Obamacare succeeding. Millions of people trying to sign up, find ways of getting cheaper health care, finding ways of getting health care to begin with. We'll bring you some reports and some stories of people being helped out across the country. Also, slave labor being used in Qatar to build stadiums for the 2022 FIFA World Cup. I wonder what Tom Friedman feels about that. And William Crystal and others expressing their casual cruelty and sociopathy as programs like WIC, food stamps and other vital services are threatened during the government shutdown.
Also coming up is we have a story about the First Lady of Texas, Anita Perry, having some interesting views on abortion. And yeah. Rick Perry not wanted to have none of that. No, that's not happening. Also, we got Fox News contributors seem to be going crazy over this whole government shutdown and Obamacare thing, if that's news to any of you. But we have a few specific instances we'll talk about, which are quite insane,
stunning, if you will, unbelievable, all things that we deal with covering these people on The Majority Report. So a lot to get to today. And obviously in the better half of the program, we'll be taking your calls and IMs, and we're interested to hear from everybody, but also particularly people who might be a furloughed federal worker being locked out of the job because of the Republican extortion attempt. So there's a lot to get to today, and we will be right back with Tim Murphy of Mother Jones Magazine.
Chase you out of earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase it down out of earth. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase the devil out of earth. To outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. Satan is an evilous man, but him can't choke sit on I man. So when I check him, my last in hand, and if him slip a gun with him hand, I'm
get an out of bird. I'm gonna put on an iron shirt and chase the devil out of bird. I'm gonna send him to outer space to find another race. I'm gonna send him to outer space.
We are back on the Majority Report. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks, and joining us now is Tim Murphy. He's a contributing writer at Mother Jones Magazine. Tim, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Very happy to have you on. So we're going to be obviously talking about the Republican shutdown, get into the bigger picture in a bit. But yesterday, basically, Republicans tried a new political gambit where they basically passed, they brought to the floor of the House a couple of kind of piecemeal spending proposals to restore some funding for popular things like national parks, things dealing with veterans and national, and I think also the District of Columbia. Democrats held firm, and I'm just wondering if you could kind of elaborate on the latest Republican tactics, what that was about, and how Democrats responded.
Yeah, well, it marked a pretty clear shift from what Republicans have been doing for, well, I guess for the last couple of months, if not the last few years, in which they had been insistent on passing a continuing resolution that defunded the Affordable Care Act, or at least in the most recent incarnation, delayed the implementation of the exchanges by a year. What they did yesterday is they just kind of took three things that they thought people could generally agree on. In this case, that's Veterans Affairs, because people like veterans, national parks, because that's what everyone was talking about yesterday, and funding for the District of Columbia, I guess because, you know, we need the money. And they passed kind of clean continuing resolutions for only those three specific departments and forwarded them on to the Senate. But President Obama has been pretty clear that he's not going to just, you know, go through 25 different continuing resolutions. He's going to, you know, take them all at once because that's kind of what traditionally happens.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Obamacare is being rolled out anyways, and it seems to me that that's the kind of really, you know, it's the sort of hilarious, almost, yeah, kind of really hilarious subtext to this Republican act of political extortion that Obamacare is moving along almost regardless in many respects. What is the kind of Republican response to that very specific reality that this whole thing is not even delaying ostensibly what they think is this major national catastrophe that they need to use any means they have at their disposal to delay?
Right. I mean, that is kind of the hang up here is that if they did, you know, pass 25 piecemeal spending bills, they would still end up having funded the Affordable Care Act because it's not funded through the continuing resolution. I mean, that's already been kind of paid for.
Right.
Congress, in a rare moment of clarity, had the foresight to do that when they signed it into law. And so ultimately, kind of what they have is you have House Republicans hoping that if they can just take the piecemeal approach, eventually, when they've kind of taken care of the popular programs, they'll be left with, you know, more controversial stuff, and then they'll have a little bit of leverage and stuff like that. And conversely, you know, Democrats and supporters of the Affordable Care Act, I think, know that with every passing day that it's law and that people are going and visiting the exchanges and signing up, it just logistically becomes so much harder to roll that back. I mean, you can't, once somebody has joined the health insurance exchange, it's a lot more difficult to take that away than it is to just simply not implement it.
Yeah, it becomes a living, breathing reality, and I think that that's where there are, even though this is a pretty radically new situation in some respects, the historical parallels between the freakouts on the right for everything from Social Security, Medicare, you know, before implementation and then after implementation, the reality is radically, radically different.
Yeah, and you know, if you talked to Congressman on the Hill yesterday, a lot of what you heard, at least, you know, obviously on the Republican side, had to do with, you know, the new meme that you're hearing a lot among, you know, conservative pundits and conservative policymakers, which is that the exchanges have been a disaster. Tim Hillskamp, the arch-conservative from Kansas, went on about how he had spent about 12 hours trying to sign up in the healthcare exchanges and with no luck. And, of course, that means that he'd been up for about 48 straight hours or something, which is, you know, kind of hard to believe. But that's kind of the new thing, is that the websites were down, and so the exchanges are a disaster.
There has never been a private sector computer launch for a private sector company where the websites have ever gone down, ever. So, of course,
my dealings with Verizon and, you know, my healthcare provider are always quite seamless.
Absolutely.
But that is, you know, there's an attempt to kind of frame the rollout of the exchanges as a disaster, and I think it's laced with that fear that if it's anything but, it's not going anywhere.
What does it tell you to get more into the kind of mentality of Republicans right now? But what does that anecdote in and of itself tell you, other than, it sounds ludicrous, the notion that a congressman has been up for 48 hours and actually has spent personally 12 hours in front of a computer screen trying to figure out an exchange? I mean, it tells you a number of things. One is that it seems like, according to most reports, most people, even if they've had to deal with some headaches and some computer crashes, which, as you say, is no different from anything you might deal with when you're just dealing directly with Aetna, or certainly Verizon or Comcast for that matter, but somehow they've been able to figure out how to get on an exchange within an hour or two, maybe 3 hours at most. And also, what does it say to you that somebody's trying to score a PR point by basically saying, I'm not doing my job for 12 hours. I've basically shut government down, and I'm tooling around on a website and acting incompetent to prove some point. What does that kind of say about the mentality that you get from the House Republicans right now?
Yeah, you know, rolling out an enormous, you know, new federal program can be extraordinarily glitchy. And obviously Social Security and Medicare, you know, they still have their problems, and they definitely had their problems in the early going. And it's the kind of thing where you want people to be looking at with kind of an honest, critical eye and pointing it out. And if there's something wrong with the website, that really should be fixed. But, you know, I think what we've seen, at least kind of in the early going, is kind of this gleeful, you know, celebration almost when, you know, websites are down, and you know, you've heard conservative lawmakers, you don't want their constituents, you know, checking out the exchanges. They think it's kind of a waste. And, you know, so it's kind of an act of desperation at this point. And, I mean, obviously shutting down the federal government is the most extreme measure yet that Republicans have taken to combat the Affordable Care Act. But I think there's, you know, a realization sort of, if not now, it's just not going to happen, and it's going to be here to stay.
Yeah, and also the energy towards shutting down the federal government has obviously been with not just this Congress, but obviously since 2010, in this kind of wave of real radical extremists that have come into the House. And it's funny, you almost get the image of, like, you know, some freshman congressman running into a cloakroom going, you know, I just got a letter from a constituent, and she's, you know, a mother of four, and she was trying to, you know, work on the exchange to get an affordable plan for her family, and the site went down. You know, great news, boys, you know. Like, what is it exactly that they're rooting for here? They're not doing constituent service to try to help make things, you know, help work around the glitches. They're celebrating the glitches. But I do think that there's a serious point here. And, you know, the viewpoint of this program very much is that, in contrast to some pundits and some analysts who think that they use phrases like President Obama has used, like, you know, the fever will be broken. Eventually, Republicans will do something like shut down the federal government to stop, you know, a bill that's already been passed and validated endlessly from being implemented. That eventually they'll do something like that that will have such a public backlash that the sort of hidden, slumbering, moderate, or even just rational faction will kind of reemerge and take over the party and get people into line. You actually spoke with Congressman Devin Nunes for a piece you just wrote in Mother Jones, and he's talking about how the Republicans are like lemmings, and they're walking to their suicide, and there's going to be huge repercussions. What's funny, though, at the end of the article, though, is that he reaffirms that he stands with the leadership and what they're doing, even after this big kind of melodramatic elaboration. So I guess what I'm getting, you know, is this a fever, or is this just the state of the Republican Party as it is? It's not a deviation from the norm. It is the norm.
Well, I think It's a strain of the Republican Party and the conservative movement that sort of has its ebbs and flows, and I guess hits that kind of, you know, fever pitch every decade or so. I mean, it's essentially the same arguments that you heard in 1995 and 1996, except that, you know, the targeted departments and programs have changed a little bit, and the main characters are, well, I guess John Boehner is still there and Newt Gingrich is still on the television, but, you know, some of the main characters have changed. So I don't think, I mean, you know, it's very true that, you know, opposition to, you know, government involvement in, you know, healthcare and that kind of thing is a large minority of the American, you know, political spectrum. And these are actually views that are very widely held, and a lot of the loudest congressmen, you know, beating the drum to defund Obamacare have the support of the majority of their constituents on that. And so, you know, they're divorced from kind of the broader political reality, but, you know, what they're hearing back home is a lot of what they're acting on. So I think it's kind of unrealistic to expect it to really go away. But at the same time, you know, the longer the shutdown goes on, the longer the effects are felt, and especially, you know, the more exposure there is to the Affordable Care Act, I do think there's a possibility for a real backlash against that.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true, and we'll get more into that in a moment. But, I actually think that there is a bit of a difference between the government shutdown in the mid-90s and the reality of that time versus now in a couple of different ways. One was that shutdown was not about stopping a specific piece of legislation that had already passed, that had already been affirmed by the Supreme Court. It was not about using the mechanics of government to stop something that had already been kind of validated by all three branches of government. Also, Newt Gingrich, you know, of course, very extreme, very right-wing guy. He and Clinton negotiated, and they negotiated some bad things, just as if Boehner had control over his Congress, him and Obama would negotiate and come to some agreements on some very bad things from the perspective of middle class or poor people. But at the same time, when Gingrich went back to his caucus, he had his caucus at that time, and they could move something. And they were more attentive in that sense to broader national wins. Like, they were interested in possibly winning the presidency. And it seems to kind of go to your other point about they're listening to their constituencies. And I think you're absolutely right about that. And when you look at the Republican Party getting smaller and smaller, in a certain sense, getting more regional, getting more isolated in some respects, as they kind of maybe almost give up on a certain type of national ambition, where does it stop? What is that incentive to turn away from that base that they're validating? Because in those respects, it does seem different to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's a point well taken. The main similarity is just this kind of willingness, kind of as a collective unit, to walk up to the edge and then jump. And it takes, you know, it's taken them a while to kind of build up to that, and they hadn't done it earlier in the Obama administration. And kind of, you know, after enough battles, they decided this is where they were going to go. But, you know, to the point of the shutdown then versus now, I mean, you know, one of the kind of most important stories that's not really being told is that Republicans sort of already won on this. You know, they wanted, you know, to essentially extend sequestration, and that was the hang-up for many months, you know, between the Senate and the House. And
exactly.
At this
right.
point, that's not really what we're arguing about. We're going to get an extension of sequestration. It's whether or not we're going to defund the Affordable Care Act, too. So, you know, if the Republicans think that they're losing on this, they really need to look at what the original debate was.
No, isn't that exactly what the story of this political period has been, which is that the only metrics by which the Republicans are really losing is if you play a kind of day-to-day, very narrow sense of a horse race, and you look at poll numbers, and people are more and more fed up and disgusted with Republicans. Obviously, they weren't able to win back the White House. Of course, there's some political metrics by which they're losing. And if you are anything other than adopting the most radical, extreme Ted Cruz-like position, they are the right is setting the terms of the debate. We have a jobs crisis. We've had austerity. We have increasing poverty. We're talking about cutting programs. Sequester was supposed to be something nobody liked. Republicans seemed fine with it. and it's baked into the cake, which is a phrase Sam uses a lot. So I guess that's another question. Do you think that the Republicans, is it that they don't understand it, or that they're the ones, not the Obama administration, not the kind of sophisticated Democrats supposedly, but they're the ones who are playing the long game, and they see that every time they make a radical extreme reach like this, they get bad-mouthed on TV, their numbers go down, and they basically get what they want?
Yeah, I don't want to suggest that they're playing the long game, because their numbers, you know, the approval rating for Congress does keep on going down, and and you know, House Republicans did not do very well in the last election, even after redistricting, you know, solidified a lot of their gains. I think, you know, to the question of kind of a shrinking base or like a shrinking geography of the party, there was a really interesting map at the New Yorker, actually, I think earlier this week or last weekend, that looked at kind of where the loudest voices, you know, for, you know, the GOP shutdown path were coming from, or, and, you know, where the loudest voices for, you know, not raising the debt ceiling were coming from. And they were coming from kind of the reddest possible districts and kind of the most conservative parts of the country. And so, you know, that is where you really get this kind of echo chamber that kind of doesn't recognize the gains that they've already made, doesn't really recognize that, you know, we're kind of stepping slowly toward, you know, the reality of a Paul Ryan budget as it is, and think that we just kind of need to do more and more and more.
Right. So do you see any possibility? Is the Democratic response then to continue to play? Like, I think there's no question President Obama is not going to allow the Affordable Care Act is the signature domestic achievement. That is a clear dividing line, it seems to me. But I agree with you on everything else, that we're slow walking towards a Paul Ryan budget. We're having a debate about depth of cuts, depth of austerity versus investment, and sort of focusing on regenerating the middle class and dealing with poverty issues. So do the Democrats continue this pace of slow walking the Paul Ryan budget and trying to guard things like the Affordable Care Act, or is there a pivot from Democrats represented by the wing that does seem a little bit more emergent and powerful, of people like Elizabeth Warren or Sherrod Brown or Bernie Sanders, that might try to kind of actually stake out a genuine progressive alternative, which I guess would really leave President Obama very much in the middle, which is where he likes to be, but I'm not necessarily sure how relevant it would be over the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that would be a great question for Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren, but, you know, just one not benefit of the shutdown, but, you know, consequence of the shutdown is we see kind of the impact of drastic reductions in government services over a very kind of confined, hopefully confined period of time, you know, whether that's 1 week or 3 weeks. You know, you see what happens, you know, when 85,000 people lose access to, you know, nutrition services, or when hundreds of thousands of people can't show up to work and have to rearrange their budgets, you know, in not just Washington, D.C., but North Carolina and New Hampshire and really all over the country. So you get to kind of get this sneak preview of what, you know, ultra austerity really looks like, and what government services really do for you in a limited period of time. And ultimately, I think that really could, you know, help Democrats. And you know, it's not just, you know, veteran services, it's defense contractors, and it's, you know, there's a missing woman in Idaho, I believe, who they had to call off the search party because there weren't enough people to go searching because they were furloughed. You know, I think this kind of thing does play into the Democrats' hands, because
if they're willing to seize it.
Yeah, and people actually see it, and people actually pay attention to it, which is really not something that seemed to happen with sequestration.
Right, and I think that this is a really important point here, because, you know, as if on clock, sort of just on time, Congresswoman, what's her name, Marsha Blackburn, I believe, from Tennessee, she said, I think yesterday, something to the effect of, you know, the government shutdown is great because it's teaching people teaching Americans to live with less government. Like, why don't the people of Idaho get an old fashioned search party together for that woman? They don't need, you know, police or helicopters or anything. Why don't they just, you know, get some maps out and have a nice, you know, community search party or whatever other sort of nonsense goes through these people's heads. But I do think, though, that is a very, judging by the sequester, that the hits that have affected the vulnerable and the middle class have been normalized. The ones that have affected, you know, like air travel have been softened. And you already see the spin. You see Blackburn saying, learn to live with less, or even William Crystal just kind of, yeah, this isn't such a big deal. Who really cares? You know, the sky isn't falling. That's the Fox talking point. Is there a danger that instead of a reaction to the austerity and the shutdown, that it just becomes the next sort of lowering of the standards for most Americans in terms of what they expect and what can they can get in terms of government and in terms of services?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a risk that it simply, you know, becomes a new normal and people just kind of get used to the shutdown as a thing that happened. It had been a while, you know, before that it happened in 1995, so it was a shock then, and it has been a while since 1995, so it's a shock now. But, you know, it happened 8 times in the 1980s for kind of a variety of periods, and in those instances, they weren't quite as severe. I think they kept most of, you know, the monuments and stuff like that open. But it was certainly a much more common occurrence then, and which is why we don't hear as much about those examples. You know, I think going forward, you know, the risk in this instance is obviously the debt ceiling, which is set to, you know, we're about to hit that limit in about 2 weeks. And it's going to be a lot bigger, as bad as, you know, the shutdown sounds. It's going to be, you know, I mean, that runs the risk of entering into a new recession and kind of a broader global economic crisis. And so, it, you know, if that happens, I think it'll be kind of impossible to miss the severity of what's happening.
Absolutely. So, and getting to that, do you think, I've seen some people write that, you know, look, Boehner, the Republican leadership, they're willing to shut government down. They're willing to become profoundly unpopular, you know, and they're very, again, if you're looking at it from just a very narrow sense of self-interest, this is how he keeps on being Speaker of the House. This is what people in most Republican districts want. So from a very narrow perspective, they're doing what's right for themselves politically, at least in the short term, or at least for the foreseeable future. But some people said, look, John Boehner, and certainly some of the business community that backs Republicans are not going to stand for flushing the faith and credit of the United States down the toilet. I have to say, you know, again, there's nothing in Republican behavior that would convince me that they aren't willing to take that step. And I'm not, you know, saying that because I don't think that there aren't a fair number of Republicans who get how drastic that would be and don't actually want to do it. But I think just the political dynamics point to there not really being a cap on things. And I'm just wondering, do you think that rationality, those other interests will kick in when it comes to the debt ceiling? Or are we going to basically see the same dynamic?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of $1 million question, or I
right.
guess much more than
$1 million.
Trillions. But, you know, exactly. Yeah. And John Boehner isn't going to, you know, see the light because Democrats, you know, Paul Krugman makes the case really well. He's going to do it because, you know, the Republican Party isn't just these incredibly conservative pockets of, like, Arkansas. You know, it's also the Chamber of Commerce and it's, you know, Wall Street and all these other business interests who, for all their other faults, certainly do understand kind of the dangers of, you know, the U.S. losing its status as the global currency and entering into a new recession. I think that's kind of the hope, is that kind of the big money that's behind the Republican Party will be able to, you know, be a sufficient carrot to get John Boehner to, you know, bring his party on board, or at least, you know, wrangle up enough votes to join Democrats on that.
So we're basically in a time where we're praying that Goldman Sachs can exert enough pressure on Republicans to save us from a global economic catastrophe.
Yeah, I think Goldman Sachs owes us one.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Goldman Sachs, maybe they could have even piped in to stop the shutdown. And the problem is maybe they did, and it just doesn't make a difference. So, I mean, as you say, that's the multi-trillion dollar question. You know, going out into the horizon – and again, this is another, you know, this is obviously a question that has a lot to it and it could change, obviously. But is the Republican Party as we know it now, is this just something that demographic trends changing voting patterns. Is that basically the answer to it? That there's nothing sort of in the short term to kind of shift this basic dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, and they've taken serious steps over the last couple of years to shore up,
right,
you know, the health of their party against demographic shifts, especially in places like North Carolina and in Texas with different, you know, voting laws. You know, I there's also, you know, the obviously it's not entirely sustainable, you know, in the next, you know, decades down the road that, you know, African Americans are going to go 95% to whoever the Democratic nominee is. And, you know, even a return, you know, to the levels of Hispanic support that George W. Bush got would be, you know, a tremendous boost to the Republican Party. So I don't think the demographic shifts are set in stone, but, you know, I don't think that they can continue, you know, with the platform that they have indefinitely.
Yeah, well, we shall see. We know we do know how it's just so profoundly hard for them to not say horrible things about rape and Hispanic people and Black people. So we'll see if they're able to restrain those impulses. And in the meantime, we'll wait and see if Goldman can save us from another global recession, which is I don't actually appreciate that irony, but it certainly is irony. Tim Murphy of Mother Jones Magazine, thanks so much for joining us on the Majority Report.
Thanks for having me.
No, pleasure. Oh, wow. Unbelievable.
Save us, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, save it. Hey,
you're our only hope.
Lloyd Blankfein, as you're out there doing God's work, and I feel like I don't even have the energy to joke about that. That, like, literally, that really is actually the situation, that we need to just bank on the same sector that have been the core of every problem in American economic, social, and political trends of the last several decades. They're the ones who need to go on that phone and give Boehner that number that Sam talks about. But, you know, to be honest with you, maybe there is some magic number he hits, and in conjunction with, do you want to just be a solid choice as worst House Speaker ever, or do you just unequivocally want to be remembered as, you know, the drunk guy who left his tanning bed long enough to destroy the global economy? Maybe there's some type of appeal to whatever dignity he has left and a massive payoff at the end that will let him build, you know, violate the Hastert rule again. But we shall see. I don't know. I'm not necessarily optimistic about this. I want to play. I think that this is very illustrative of what Tim and I were just talking about. This is some sound from Morning Joe. Sam Stein, who's of course been on this program from the Huffington Post, is on, and Bill Kristol's on, and they're sitting in Morning Joe, and they got their Starbucks coffee out, and they're really doing some deep analysis about the shutdown, of course, and basically, you know, the Kristol spin and the Republican spin, and Bill Kristol in that very special way, it's like nothing ever ruffles him. The only thing that ever gets his sort of, you know, energy up is when, you know, we need to bomb someone in the Middle East, whether it's Iran, Syria, whatever, who cares? But besides that, he's very much that kind of like seen it all, did it all pundit. Like, government shutdown, it's not such a big deal. Healthcare, look. So what? A baby's malnourished. Stop whining. Hey, a baby's not going to be malnourished. Who cares? Whatever. So that's his whole thing. Government shut down. It isn't a big deal. The sky isn't falling. And I'm sure it's not falling on him and whatever, you know, townhouse he has lined with fantasy books about the Middle East and video games. But at any rate, he's on and he's making the case that government shutdown is not a big deal. Who cares? And Sam Stein responds with some reality, and William Kristol responds in one of the more morally despicable things I've seen on television recently. So we'll play that clip and respond to it.
The idea that this is not the end of the world and that they're funding the three most important agencies, I mean, it's maybe in your world, it's not the end of the world, but, you know, I've spent the last, you know, 6 hours last night just surveying local news stories about this. I mean, 85,000 people are losing nutritional assistance in Arkansas. That's not inside the Beltway. That's in Arkansas. 13 Head Start programs are closing in Connecticut. That's not inside the Beltway. So for these people who are affected by these cuts, it is sort of comparable to the end of the world. And I understand that, you know, it's great to wait it out and to, you know, negotiate from a better platform with more power and the debt ceiling and all that. But those 2 weeks that you waited out are consequential for a whole number of people, not just in the agencies that the Republicans want funded, but many, many agencies beyond that. And I think we tend to lose that perspective when we have these types of conversations. And that's all I wanted to say.
Look, I think if there are genuine human emergencies, the Republican House should move to fund those relevant programs. But the entire federal government, I was chief of staff at the Education Department. I had to designate the essential employees when we shut down. And we designated, I joked to Bill Bennett, who was my boss, you know, can we just designate, say that no one at the Education Department is essential? In all honesty, no, that's not true. And that's too flip because there are people who depend on education funds. I understand that before I get lectured by Sam. But the truth is, there are parts that really are. There are parts that are serious, that are urgent, and parts that are not. The Republican House can move on cases of genuine human emergency, but a 1 or 2 week shutdown is not going to be the end of the world. And if you can't go into the Smithsonian,
unless
for
you're
a
on
of
food,
weeks,
unless you're on nutritional assistance,
there's a really important
not going to be the end
point.
Of the world. Honestly, even if you're on nutritional assistance from the federal government, you know,
there's a really important
the state of Arkansas
point.
Can help out. Localities can help out. Churches can help out. I believe that no one is going to starve in Arkansas.
Wow,
that is one of the most. Listen to the casual cruelty, the relaxed sociopathy of that comment. That is, I'll speak, you know, personally for a moment. Look, when I was young growing up, my family relied on food stamps at different points. My parents had me, they were very young, whatever, you know, irresponsible, supposedly. Maybe they were, in fact. But look, they had me when they were young. They were working incredibly hard. And, you know, things just didn't work. And at times, and the notion that we were living high on the hog or anything else was just, it's grotesque. And I remember vividly, I remember moments when, you know, I'm not going to exaggerate it, but I remember moments of there isn't a full dinner. What's going on? And them saying, oh, don't worry, you know, you'll be fine. Wanting and doing their best to shield me. Hide their shame, hide their fear about their son's well-being, about my sister's well-being, who was very young, you know, almost a baby. And the notion that this isn't affecting everybody is just disgusting. And I'm going to read from a story. This is a type of local news report that Sam Stein was talking about that Bill Kristol obviously has no interest in. But this is from KSL, a local television affiliate in Salt Lake City in Utah. And basically, up to 65,000 Utahns who use the special supplement nutrition program for women, infants, and children, more commonly known as WIC, will lose that assistance. And many say they did not see it coming. Mathia Olney, is a Utah mother struggling to make ends meet and counts on WIC to help feed her family, which includes two sets of twins aged 2 years and 6 months. Money's very tight and we're struggling just to afford diapers right now, she said. Her youngest has medical problems and they use a special baby formula that costs about $750 a month. That's like a rounding error in Bill Kristol's checkbook, which he's gotten off of warmongering, blocking progress in America and ensuring people like this woman struggle. She typically picks this formula up for free at the WIC office. Quote, and then back to her. We were supposed to go tomorrow for our appointment and pick some up, and they called today and they said they were shutting down due to the government, Olney said. So this is what's happening every day as a result of this shutdown. And this is what Marsha Blackburn means when people need to learn with less, live with less. They mean a baby, a child does not get infant formula. And this is what Bill Kristol doesn't even have the time to put in a Google search about because he could care less. And this is why it takes Sam Stein, who does great reporting on this for the Huffington Post, to bring up at Morning Joe, because God forbid you ever have somebody on a television program who's ever had to live through anything. God forbid you ever have a representative voice on a national program to talk about the actual impact of these garbage, grotesque, savage policies that these people advocate on a day-in and day-out basis. And let's be clear, these Republicans are absolutely extreme and they're insane and they're extortionists and they're blocking the government from being funded. But, you know, moderate, reasonable people across the political spectrum are on TV every day coming out of green rooms advocating that there be slashes to programs just like this that cause this woman misery, that jeopardize this woman's mother's retirement security if she's even still there. I mean, forget retirement security. Let's be clear. Social Security, basic dignity, the bare minimum. God forbid they have that. I think listening to that clip shows you that it's not just a question of not being able to reason with people. It's really a profound, unbelievably disturbing lack of empathy and moral development that has taken to the core of American politics. And it's disgusting. I'm going to get to one more quick story here. We have time? One more quick rundown?
Sure,
or should we go to
not?
The better half?
Is it like 2 minutes or are you going
to
go over?
Let's go to the better
half. Let's go to the better half.
Sorry about that, folks. We've given the freebies enough free material. And it's time for a Majority Report public shutdown.
Only
the essential listeners.
We'll get to listen to the rest of the show at this point forward.
Exactly. But on the better half, we have great things coming. I'm going to actually do a brief story about Americans who are taking advantage of the Affordable Care Act as it comes into place. So that's some good news. It looks like it might actually really be some helping some people out. Slave labor is being used to build the World Cup stadiums in Qatar for the 2022 games. We'll get to that. Matt has a ton of stories coming at you. What do we got for the better half?
I do. Like I said earlier in the program, I will be looking at what Rick Perry's wife, Anita, has to say about abortion and what Rick Perry is saying about what his wife has to say about abortion. Also, we've got a horrible story coming from the ACLU about what this Sikh man went through while driving through Mississippi. He's a truck driver, and what he went through, not only from the state troopers there, but from the judge he had to stand in front of, is just unbelievably disgusting. And then to help lighten the mood after that horrendous story, we will be listening to a clip of what Laura Ingraham has to say about what will end the government shutdown. Laura Ingraham is a Fox News contributor, and she knows what will end the shutdown. And also, another Fox News contributor, Dana Perino, has something to say about Obamacare and what's wrong with it. And it's something that I don't think I've heard this from anyone else, but Dana Perino is laying down the law on one of the underground, little-known problems with Obamacare.
Oh, this is important news, folks. It will really make you think, well, not at all. But we'll be back with that, please.
It'll be very entertaining, though, I assure you.
Incredibly entertaining. Become a member. Support the Majority Report. You know the drill. You know how great it would be if we could bring in a member on a Matt and Mike Wednesday. But and also, in all seriousness, I mean, the coverage that this show provides, especially in the context of the kind of economic warfare being waged against the vast majority of this country and how clear and unequivocal it is and the quality that's brought to you every day, it's significant. I think that's just an objective fact. So if you have the ability, please.
We're covering the government shutdown in a way that no one else is probably covering it. I mean, you're not tuning in and hearing any of this. But it's really both sides to blame bullshit that you hear. Oh, damn. Oh, well, make a note to Cliff Schechter's radio show. You're not hearing that here because we get to the truth.
And we get also to not only is it not, you know, he said, she said, there's real human consequences here. And that's really what this show is fundamentally about, the real human consequences of all of these big questions and big issues. So become a member if you can. That would be amazing. Listeners are definitely getting affected directly by this government shutdown. Also, you can support us by
buying your coffee through justcoffee.coop using coupon code MAJORITY. buy all your Amazon stuff through Amazon, our Amazon affiliate link on the homepage of majority.fm. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/Sam Cedar. The live show is streamed at youtube.com/majority report live. Download the app, majorityapp.com. And most importantly, for these next few weeks, a little less than two at this point, go to podcastawards.com and nominate the Majority Report for News and Politics and People's Choice. It took me a second to remember what both of them were. But News and Politics, which is, you have to scroll down a little bit. It's maybe the third or fourth one in the first row. And People's Choice. Do it.
Do it. Do it.
That's all you got to do, and then let's make it 3 years straight for us for winning Best News in Politics, at least.
Good stuff. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, check out our YouTube channel, and we will see you in the better half. Satan, I feel pain.